Welcome to an ongoing series of podcasts hosted by Parathyroid Peeps. We are three San Francisco Bay Area women who are sharing our personal journeys of overcoming the debilitating symptoms of primary hyperparathyroid disease. Hi, I'm Barbara.
Hello, I'm Joyce.
And I'm Sophie. Our mission is to raise awareness and advocate for improvement in diagnosis and standards for surgical treatment. We do this by inspiring patients, doctors, and mental health care professionals to become educated about primary hyperparathyroid disease, the symptoms, diagnosis process, and the risk associated with the wait-and-see approach, and to advocate for the most advanced surgical techniques available to become the standard of care.
To learn more about the disease and our action plan, visit parathyroidpeeps.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. We incorporated Peeps into our name because it is short for people, friends, close pals, people like you. The purpose of our podcasts is to help educate the Peep community. Let's find out what we are going to learn more about today.
Parathyroid peeps, in today's podcast, you are going to hear about Barbara Johnson's journey. She lives in Reno, Nevada, where she was a court reporter and active cyclist. Over the past couple of years, she's had to be her own health advocate in order to unravel various health issues, which ultimately led her to having surgery to remove a non-cancerous parathyroid adenoma. This disease was wreaking havoc on her physical and emotional health. Here is her story. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there, Sophie.
How are you?
I am doing pretty good today. This is a good day.
All right. So could you please share with us what your symptoms were?
Mostly, I started out in about 2011 where fatigue and depression became pretty much overwhelming. And I went to see my medical doctor about it to see, you know, what was going on. And I knew that it had to be something more than ordinary because I was a runner and a bicyclist for many years. I'd been bicycling since I was 6 years old, and I toured many parts of the U.S. and Europe and Japan. And so I knew what tired was about. I knew what fatigue was about from being a court reporter for more than 40 years. Working in court is a physical and a mental mechanism that it makes you very, very tired. But this was very different. This fatigue was very different from any of those that I'd ever experienced. And then I started getting depression, really bad depression. I'd never had that before, so I really didn't know what to expect. But all of a sudden, just out of the blue, just start crying. It was more of a weeping. I'd never experienced that before, so I didn't know what was going on. That was a major symptom that pretty much I have still, but it is going away.
That's good to know.
Yeah. I was thinking this morning that part of the reason I think for the depression and the fatigue, well, especially the depression, because when I left the hospital, I got post-op instructions, and the doctor said to take lots of minerals, which I hadn't taken for several years. And so I've just been really downing the minerals, and I am getting better. I think that's really what it is. Anyway, also, I would get really thirsty. I'd be thirsty all the time, yet I'd be drinking a ton of water. And I had blurry vision for a number of years and buzzing or ringing in my ears. I would have incapacitating dizzy spells. And some of them would last, one lasted as long as 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty awful. Anyway, and then I'd have really painful bones and joints and achy bones and muscles.
So I understand that you also were suffering from some mysterious vibration in your chest. Can you talk about that?
It was in the spring of 2013, and I woke up about 4 o'clock in the morning with this vibrating sensation in my midsection. And I thought somebody in the building had installed a new jacuzzi, but it was 4 o'clock in the morning. Why would they turn it then? I don't know. Anyway, but the mystery of Mr. Jacuzzi Man, as I dubbed that vibration, continued. And then after a bit, I went out of town on a job, and I stayed at a hotel. And that's when I realized that Mr. Jacuzzi Man was not some ambient event, but it was inside of me. It was very disconcerting. The doctors that I told about that, they just looked at me like I was crazy in the head and just pretty much dismissed me. One doctor just even rolled her eyes at me. And I was appalled at that. And that really was the beginning of the struggle of getting people to listen to me, getting the medical profession to listen to me. And aside from the disrespect, you know, I was battling being sick at something that that was unknown to me, and I was scared. But in the end, that particular doctor found that I had low vitamin B12, and so I started on the shots. That helped some. So my vibration really kind of never, I really never understood what it was about, but I know that when I take an extra amount of minerals, it kind of goes away. So it probably has something to do with the nervous system.
Yeah, I also experienced some vibration in my chest, which, like you, my doctor dismissed me and told me that it was nothing to be worried about. So then I believe in 2013, you were getting ready for a very big trip. Can you talk about that?
Yes. By 2013, I had mapped out and planned about 8,000 miles of camping and bicycling. And I had planned to leave on August the 26th of 2013. This was my lifelong dream. I had mapped out cycling and camping, as I say, along the Mississippi River Trail, and that I figured was probably going to be about 3 months. And it was, this whole thing was going to take some energy, but I just figured that whatever energy I had, I would just go with it. You know, whether I could ride 10 miles or 50 miles. And at that time, or up to that time, I had been very accustomed to riding 50 or 60 miles in a day and being tired, but not this terrible fatigue that I'd been expecting. So I went to my last doctor appointment before leaving. It was a dermatologist. It had to do with a rash that I'd had for a while. It really wasn't a big deal. I really kind of thought about canceling the trip, but canceling the doctor appointment, but I didn't. And I got in there, and the PA looked at the rash, and she just sort of gasped, and because the rash was on my shins. And then she went and got the doctor, and he came in, and what had happened was both of my calves had swelled and were very hard. Anyway, the doctor came in and did a biopsy on each shin, and it turned out to be eosinophilic fasciitis. It's a rare autoimmune disease that caused the fascia of my legs to become very stiff, just like a board. I went for a massage after that, and the therapist was just totally amazed. He just couldn't believe it. It really was ugly, too. But that pretty much ended my trip, as I was told that I might not even be able to walk, much less be able to ride.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was disconcerting for sure. Anyway, they started me on some harsh drugs, high doses of prednisone and low dose methotrexate. But because the methotrexate is a chemotherapy drug, I had to have blood tests every week to make sure that it wasn't damaging my liver and my kidneys. And included in those tests were calcium testing, which proved extremely helpful to me when I was testing for hyperparathyroidism. Not many people have 20 calcium tests.
Yeah, that's true. That's
but I did.
Yeah. So did the medication help your legs?
Well, I had all of these symptoms, and I thought, well, with this treatment, that those symptoms would go away. They never went away. They didn't get better. The only thing that happened was my legs got soft and became normal. The fasciitis, the methotrexate and the prednisone took away the inflammation of the fasciitis in my legs.
So that got better. That's good to know.
Yeah, that's in remission even now. So
that's great.
It was just really odd, though, that the symptoms that I was suffering didn't go away after that. They didn't get better. They got worse.
Yeah.
And that's when I found out. It was when I found out about the hyperparathyroidism that I knew that the two were not related as far as the symptoms.
So when did you decide to meet with an endocrinologist? Or did you even go see an endocrinologist?
I did. I knew that I knew that I wasn't getting any better, and I knew that I felt very odd. I was just sad all the time, and this weeping is what really got me. This I knew was so different from what I'd experienced ever in my life. So I did. In May of 2014, I saw an endocrinologist, Dr. Fredericks, here in Reno, and I told him everything that I'd told the other doctors, and he immediately knew I had hyperparathyroidism. And it amazed me because I'd never heard of it, but I was so relieved to have a diagnosis. But then I went through three or four different days of testing, and he proved out that I did have the hyperparathyroidism.
Do you remember what your numbers were, your calcium and PTH?
Yes. My calcium numbers were anywhere from 10 up to 11.3.
Oof, that's really high.
It was, and it was, but in the eyes of many doctors, it wasn't consistently high, and I had a lot of them. I mean, I counted them this morning in the year and a half of the end of 2013 to my surgery date. I had 20 calcium tests.
Oh, and it took all this time to get a diagnosis. That's so sad.
Right. That's really a global issue, is getting diagnosed.
Yep.
But anyway, so after he made the diagnosis, that's when the fight began and the delays. It was a fight between Dr. Fredericks and the insurance company, and then the so-called second opinion doctor, who totally disagreed with Dr. Fredericks and called them disparaging names. So, you know, here's another medical professional that isn't being very professional. And anyway, the frustration just became overwhelming. So in the fall of 2014, I decided that it was right during this really frustrating time when I couldn't get a diagnosis, didn't understand hyperparathyroidism, and certainly didn't understand the urgency of it. But anyway, so I packed up my dog and my bicycles, and we went up through mostly on the west of the Mississippi. I had originally planned to do the Mississippi River trip, which would have been about 3 months, but I didn't do that. I went on over to a place called the Katy Trail in Missouri, and it's a multi-day ride, and it was just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. It's a rail trail where it's off-road, and so it's nice and safe. That's the type of rides that I go on. So that was the trip, and then I went on down to I went over to Atlanta, and then my dog got sick, so I started coming. Yeah, they wanted me. They thought he had a heart problem, but that didn't turn out. And if I had to put him down, I wanted it to be at a place with a vet that he knew. So we headed on home, and I got home, and he didn't have the new set of X-rays showed nothing, so he was fine, and he's still kicking. So then, when I got back from that trip, my symptoms after I got back home actually got worse, and the depression got deep and dark, and fatigue really ruled my life. So then I went to the website of the American Association of Endocrinologists and looked up hyperparathyroidism, and that's when my search began. The most valuable thing that I learned from that particular site was that it was essential to get an experienced surgeon.
Yeah, that is key.
Yeah,
absolutely key. They are not all created equal for this disease, unfortunately.
Right. So then I went to other websites, very well-respected health organizations, you know, like UCLA and the Cleveland Clinic, who actually had a specialty in eosinophilic fasciitis also. So I thought, so I gave that great consideration also, Mayo. And I also went to the Norman Parathyroid Center website. But I decided to go to UCLA because it was closer than Florida, and it was not far from where I grew up. But in the meantime, I had talked with a friend of a friend who had hyperparathyroidism and just had surgery.
And where did that friend have surgery?
That was in Reno.
Okay, so in your hometown,
yeah,
close to your hometown. Okay.
Right. But then at the end of our conversation, I was informed that she was scheduling her second one.
Oh,
almost back to back. I don't remember if I was told, or maybe I wasn't told at all, why. I don't know if it was because of a failed surgery or there was a second one, or I just don't know. But anyway, that just sent caution through me. And I went back and started rereading the Norman Clinic website and all of the information there, and decided that I didn't have time. I was 72 years old at the time of surgery, and I just didn't have time to mess around with reoperations. It just, you know, I don't know that I could have even accomplished that. But at any rate, so I decided on to at least try to get approved by the Norman Clinic. I sent them all of my tests from Dr. Fredericks and all of the calcium tests. And then about the first part of August, Dr. Lopez called me and said that the group of doctors there, as they normally do, go through all of your records and they discuss each patient. And they discussed that because Dr. Lopez had experience with another eosinophilic fasciitis patient, that he would be the one to do the surgery, which is really pretty amazing, because since 1975, there's only been 300 diagnoses of eosinophilic fasciitis.
Oh, wow. That's unbelievable. So
yeah, it's very, very rare. So what's the chance of drawing a doctor who'd had that experience?
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be, yeah. So I started the process then of self-referring to the Norman Clinic.
And that was about last summer, right? When you say last August, it was August of 2015, a couple months ago?
Yeah, yes. And anyway, we ended up, well, let me back up just a little bit. Back in February of 2015, I went to yet another primary care physician, and with still the same issues. And I told him about the vibration and the palpitations and the diagnosis of HPT. And so he sent me for an echocardiogram. And that was a step in the right direction, I thought. At least he was interested. He wasn't
dismissive.
Yeah, absolutely. And the echocardiogram came back as my having two mildly calcified heart valves. Uh-huh. And he told me that it had nothing to do with HPT. And that just didn't ring well, didn't set well with me. How can that be? And it took me about a half an hour, maybe less, to find on the internet where they are related. That hypercalcium causes the calcification of heart valves, or can. So I felt between the osteopenia and the two calcified heart valves that I urgently needed to do something. So that's when I started the self-referring process to the Norman Clinic. And I also felt that one of the reasons why I decided to get evaluated by them is because according to the chart published by Medicare, NPC does far more hyperparathyroid surgeries than anyone else, because that's all they do. They do nothing else. They don't do thyroid. They do nothing but hyperparathyroid. So that's when I sent all of my paperwork to them. And so they, in their routine discussions of new patients, they said they were pretty certain, almost 100% certain, that I did have a tumor. But because my numbers were low, my numbers weren't screaming high.
You mean your calcium numbers or your PTH?
My calcium and the PTH. My parathyroid hormone was high normal. It was in the mid-40s and a 37 reading.
Yeah.
And my vitamin D was on the lower side. But as explained to me, these numbers meant they were inappropriately normal.
Exactly, yeah.
And in the meantime, I purchased for $2.99, this app that the Norman Clinic had created. And that was the best buy that I could have used my money for. Just it assured me that I was in need of a surgery, that I had hyperparathyroidism.
And so for our listeners, this app is also what helped me get my own diagnosis.
It's
Yeah, it's an app that you can download, like you said, I think $2.99, and you plug in your numbers, and it does not require a lot of numbers. If I remember correctly, you just put in your calcium, your vitamin D, and PTH, and you get instantly the reading of your chances of having this disease. And I know for me, the little red dial went all the way to the very end on the right-hand side, telling me that I had this disease. Is that what your reading was as well?
It was not to the very end. It was actually just barely over the very likely side.
Okay.
But it was in the very likely side.
It's a great tool. I highly recommend people download that app if they have any doubt, if their doctor questioned them. I think it's very helpful.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Because what it does is it takes those numbers and puts them, analyzes them to where things that the eye can't really see, because they have Norman Parathyroid Clinic has done so much research that the numbers of other different people could all look, well, your numbers are kind of like mine, but it doesn't, but the doctors are saying you don't have it. And I've plugged in other people's numbers and they were very similar to mine, but they didn't even reach the likely.
Yeah.
And so this app has probably the equivalent of 100 researchers.
Yes. All right. So now, fast forward. You are in Tampa, Florida, at the Norman Parathyroid Center, and it's the day of your surgery. Can you walk us through that day, that morning?
That was an astounding day. For several weeks before that, well, since the time I got the approval for surgery, I was really nervous about it. I was anxious about it because I didn't know if I would be sent home. Maybe my numbers wouldn't be quite right. I just wasn't sure. I was anxious about the whole thing. And sometimes people don't get the surgery because they come up with a negative scan.
Just to clarify for our listeners, NPC does not require a positive scan since they do not do a focus surgery.
So on the day of surgery, we did the scan and it was negative. Dr. Lopez came in and told me that, and I just felt like somebody kicked me in the gut. But then the next thing I knew, I was waking up. I had surgery. I had a photograph of my adenoma, and that was the biggest relief of the last 4 years. That 4 year journey is coming to an end, and I knew that. So after I awoke from surgery, I was told that they found that. Later on, when I was reading the post-op report, this was probably a month after the surgery, I found that they found it within my thymus, which is between the sternum and heart. And it said that Dr. Lopez also had removed a hemorrhagic cyst. I'm not sure what that is. That's more research to do, I guess. But I am so convinced that had I gone to almost any place else, I would not have had the surgery. And that's just because of the normohormonal, what they call inappropriately normal. And I don't know that every endocrinologist or every parathyroid surgeon recognizes that.
For our listeners, to clarify, Barbara presented with what is also referred to as normal hormonal. The calcium is elevated while the PTH is in the normal range. This particular condition baffles a lot of doctors, and patients are often told incorrectly that they do not have primary parathyroidism. Inappropriately normal means that with high calcium, your PTH level should have been close to or at zero. Normal glands should shut down and not produce any more PTH when your calcium is high.
And I'm certain many, if not most places, I would have gotten sent home because of the negative scan. But they would never have found it because it was within the thymus. At least there's no way that I would have known that I know of that if they would have found it. But Dr. Lopez and Dr. Politz did know exactly where to look for that fourth gland after finding only three. And I know they knew because my surgery wasn't prolonged for any reason. It was a 21-minute surgery.
That's
And
fabulous.
that is. And so they didn't have to ha spend time exploring. They knew where it was.
Yep.
And that time even included getting samples of the other three glands for biopsy and doing a beautiful suturing job of my scar, which, by the way, 3 months later, I can't see it. And another thing, my eosinophilic fasciitis had not spread up my body. My neck was normal.
Oh, that's a relief. That's great.
Yeah, that was a real relief. So 2 hours post-surgery, my hips no longer hurt from the osteopenia. Oh. And by the way, I learned after I returned home from Florida, I went to my primary and he wanted another DEXA scan. And that DEXA scan right after surgery showed osteoporosis.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it had already dropped from the time of the previous DEXA. Yeah, but the pain was gone within hours. My thirst was almost normal, and it's normal now.
Oh, so that came back. That's fabulous.
Yeah, and the sobbing stopped immediately. I've had depression, but not with that sobbing. And to me, that was something to the parathyroid.
What a relief.
Yeah, I'm thinking the continued depression that I'm suffering is from the imbalance or the depletion of various minerals. My foggy brain is still affecting me, but it's greatly improved.
It takes a while, I think, to come back.
Yeah.
To get a real normal brain again.
Yes, and that's all part of the nervous system and the depression. And from what I understand, those are the things that are the last to go away.
Mm-hmm.
They've improved. I no longer get blurry vision. My energy level is greatly improved. And I don't wake up in the morning with my throat all glued up. That was disconcerting, too. So,
yeah.
And I still get pain off and on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why for sure, but it occurs to me that it could be from the calcium still infiltrating into my system. So, but by and large, I am doing very well. I have to be careful about getting into stressful or anxious situations. That I have learned that I need to just stay cool and calm.
So are you back on your bike now?
I have, since the surgery, I have biked a high of 15 miles in a day. But I'm used to, like I say, I'm used to doing 50 or 60 miles. But I don't get younger, so as I get older, I can't really expect the 50 or 60 miles every time. So, but that's my goal.
That's a wonderful goal.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So,
and so what's your take on all this? What would you like our listeners to know?
Well, dealing with HPT is to get your calcium checked. High calcium is bad, and each person has to take responsibility for themselves, and you have to get it done. You can't take no for an answer. Get the calcium pro, and to remember that adults over the age of 30 or 40 do not live with blood calcium in the tens. If you have more than a few tens and you're older than 30 or 40, you need to see somebody, an endocrinologist. Presumably that's who I saw. But hyperparathyroidism, I have learned, is so incredibly easy to cure. It's a 20-minute surgery, but it has generally a 98% cure rate. And the stumbling blocks, as I see with this disease, are getting a timely diagnosis. I think that's so important. And doctors not knowing enough about parathyroidism, so a little education there, and inexperienced surgeons of methods of surgery that are within the current date realm. For instance, there's some that believe a certain way, but those beliefs are old. And so the techniques need to be brought up to date. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And patients shouldn't be afraid to stand up for themselves. And I know it's difficult to educate and advocate for yourself when you're already sick. You've got brain fog. Most of us have that. And that's really disrupting to your thinking powers. But had I not advocated for myself and learned everything that I could, even by going to Dr. Google, which I've gotten some disparaging snickers from various family and friends that I've done to doctor to
I
doctor.
did too, so.
Yeah, I think most of us did. But you have these things going on, and yet and your thinking powers are not up to par. Had I not advocated for myself, where would I be? Would I still be fighting for a diagnosis? Probably so. And what about my heart? Would I continue? Would it continue have calcifying? Yes. And
Absolutely.
yeah. But the good news, Dr. Lopez told me this was part of our post discussion. The good news is that the calcification has immediately stopped.
That's
It will
wonderful.
not get worse. And he says, sorry, we can't get it to go away, but it won't get worse. And he said, but the good news is that your bones will get better and even possibly back to a normal state. So the story ends on a good note. So I'm very pleased with that. So,
So happy you found the help you needed.
oh, me too. I don't know what I would have done. I mean, even just the deterioration of my body was enough to make me so discouraged. I just felt like my whole life was going to hell in a handbasket. And until I had the surgery.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara, for sharing your story. I'm sure you will help a lot of listeners and give them the courage to either self-diagnose, advocate for themselves, or do what they need to do to find the surgeon that will help them.
Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you for joining us for today's podcast. Be sure and check our website, parathyroidpeeps.com, for a complete listing of archived podcasts.
Like our Facebook page to be notified of any new podcasts when they become available.
Also, follow us on Twitter. Your support is greatly appreciated to advance our mission.